what the hell time it is.
Where's the,
I don't know. Everything is in disarray in here.
It's
11:01.
You're making that up.
You don't know.
I do know.
Do you?
It is 11:01.
Oh, I hear another clock.
That is probably not right.
That other clock down there is never correct. You know that funky clock on the board? You know, they set that with magnets.
Well, let's just assume that it's right for now. It's 1:38 after the hour of 11, and it's the month of December in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the partially appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. Thank you for coming along. It's another glorious Monday in the People's Republic of Portland.
Thank you.
And welcome to day 12. We're here in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, from, as Jim Riley once said, high atop the bottom of the coin tower. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Here's a fascinating thing that's happening right now. I'm watching Sarah as she's filing through all the programs on the start button of the leftmost computer in front of her. And I think we've now discovered the younger person's version of my grandparents trying to figure out why the VCR is just continually blinking 12 noon. This is Sarah attempting to find some sort of a... some sort of
I'm
a...
I'm trying to find the clock.
Don't worry about it. It's there somewhere. You worry your pretty little head. Time is just an amorphous concept. Time is just a concept created by, it's just a concept created by philosophers to, to do a thing. And there's some Douglas Adams line I'm searching for there, but it's not really coming together. 503-733-297. Now you're just opening random computer programs. Just opening random windows. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you'd like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick, are you actually typing in help? Are you typing in clock into the help window?
Yes.
Okay. If you'd like to engage with us about your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your what have you, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Thank you for coming. Maybe there's something in the Pueblo, Colorado catalog about how to...
I sent away for several. They should be delivered any time.
Yes.
Did you really send away for one in Gout?
I did.
Fantastic.
One of many. and you'll be pleased to know, since you're the program director, yes, they were all free, and so was the postage, because I ordered online.
Thank you.
So that's nothing out of our programming budget that we'll have to go without.
Because otherwise they're going to take away our urinal cakes.
Yes.
All right. Although we know purchase order required. You don't even want to know from purchase orders. I have to say this. In all honesty, now, we love working at CBS Radio. They're a fine company. They've treated us well.
Yep.
I have no complaints. I'm just saying, my only observation is this is really, you have never worked for a more bureaucratic company. You have never worked for a company that is just more laden down in paperwork like so much Bernays sauce. It's just paperwork, forms, things filled out in triplicate, things filed on... and
they are the forms of Edward R. Murrow.
They're not. I think Edward R. Murrow probably was able to find his forms. Have you ever... I'm not going to go on and on about this because it's a thing that really isn't relatable to anybody except fellow employees of CBS Radio. But perhaps your corporation has some equivalent to this. Where a lot of the forms, I guess, I don't know whether they're trying to save trees or whether they just loathe us, but a lot of the forms are filed online. There is this system.
Oh, okay.
There is this system here at CBS where a lot of the forms you're supposed to get, whether there's a thing to set up your direct deposit, or you're going to take a day off, or it's like you got to go get a bunion yanked out of your foot or something. And, man, you have to go online and just navigate just this.
There's a booklet telling you where to put your sixth or seventh password.
Seriously,
before it'll tell you where you are.
And there really are about 14 different logins required for anything you do. They all expire every 2 weeks, but they don't all expire at the same time. So about every 9 days, it's staggered just enough to drive you mental. It really is just this Kafka-esque Cambodia of online paperwork. You have to hack your way through. Just like it's just a terrible underground thicket of bureaucratic nonsense that you have to... Every time you want to, you know, like buy something out of the vending machine. It's just insane. All right. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you'd like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Who wants to guess what this noise is? Anyone?
Bueller? Is that a person or an animal?
Well, I guess that depends on one's definition.
Mm.
That makes me uncomfortable.
Fantastic.
What is that?
I don't even want to answer it now because because you and you do you're kind of sort of shifting back and forth and you've got an awkward apprehensive look on your face.
I know what that is.
Do you know?
Yes.
Would you like to explain to everybody how you know what it is, Sarah
Well, because
Dillon?
I know what you were doing this weekend, and I know how we left the show off last week. So I'm assuming that that might be Screech Powers in pleasure. Am I right?
Are you feeling all cringy?
No.
I don't even want to think about
scrub such yourself things. Off with a Brillo pad.
Screech.
Okay.
That is our sound of the day, by the way. All right. We'll talk about it. Did you watch the Tom Sizemore video?
I did not watch the Tom Sizemore. I'm sorry. I ended up dressing up as Santa Claus all weekend.
I saw your new MySpace picture, by the way. How many Santa Clauses were there? Well, we'll talk about that later. It's okay. I made time out of my busy schedule to watch the...
Did you actually watch it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. How long was it?
Stomach turning. 55 long, long minutes.
Could you tell there it was spliced together at any point?
It was. It was bad. I pulled a bunch of audio from it.
Oh, boy.
We can get to later. Screech. An exciting new direction in adult cinema. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickeverson.com. rick@rickeverson.com. And you want to talk about just the worst... I mean, really, even by the standards of adult film, it is just the worst, most hideous, most repellent thing you've ever seen in your life. There are really no words to describe how uncomfortable, and it's called Screeched, how uncomfortable the Dustin Diamond adult film makes you. It really is just off the charts icky. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program.
Hold me. Like he did by the lake on Naboo.
Our good friend Aaron Geek in the city, Duran. Hello, sir.
Oh, man, that's the worst sound ever.
It's really not. You want to hear the worst one?
Work the mojo. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't like today.
Sweet sound of the senses.
No, it's fantastic. Oh. It makes you feel icky. Good times, my friends. Yes, why am I? I'm not going to suffer alone. I don't even want to know what's on the Tom Sizemore one, since most of his entertainment in life seems to come out of beating hookers with a pistol. So I can't.
That's not the politician that ran for public office here.
No, that was
Nate
Bill.
And I have a date night tonight, so we'll watch the Tom Sizemore beating a woman.
Nothing says love like Tom Sizemore.
Seriously. Nate, will you hold me in that special way while we watch Tom Sizemore's porn film? All right. How was your weekend?
Like Tom does?
What's that?
You hug me like Tom does.
Will you hug me in that special bruise-inducing kind of way that only Tom Sizemore really knows?
Just remember, not in the face. I got to go to work tomorrow.
Oh, you mean hitting.
Right.
Okay.
I wouldn't mean the other thing. You had to bleep me. It would have been a Futurama moment.
You weren't even here. See, this is the thing, Sarah. We have to be very careful. Sarah wasn't here on Thursday. When I had to bleep Aaron on Thursday, on Thanksgiving, when I had to bleep Aaron for the first time ever.
What did he say?
It was a proud moment for me.
I can't repeat it. Aaron said something on Thanksgiving that for the first time ever he had to be bleeped. And believe it or not, and this will not surprise some people perhaps, that it was a crude, prurient comment regarding Leela from Futurama.
Who,
by the way, is made up and a cartoon and a Cyclops. So... there you go. Everything you've long suspected about Aaron is in fact true.
With huge cartoon cans.
Excellent.
She has big headphones?
Yes, she does. Sennheisers. How was your weekend, sir?
It was fantastic.
Okay.
It was so much fun that I couldn't make a Weekend Geek.
Yeah, that was kind of a backhanded way of asking about the Weekend Geek, which I was going to play today. I had it all slotted in and everything. Had it all ready. No.
I think you just say that when I don't get it made.
No, I only say it when it's late. All right. Let's see. What the hell are we doing today? We'll find out what lurks inside the toilet of listener Ryan, which everybody else had sort of forgotten about, but not me. I dwelled on
this. This could become another Geraldo thing.
Exactly. I'm going to come back with a big bandaged face.
We'll fade the black quickly.
When it's empty.
What's that?
you're going to have to sing when you discover that it's empty.
Well, that's exactly it. Look, can I just say what everybody's thinking? You know the goddamn phone's not going to be in that thing anyway. Here's the thing is, now I just want to get the girlfriend on the phone and find out exactly where it is that she really did lose it. Because you know damn well that phone's not... I mean, maybe it is. Maybe I'm wrong about this.
What was she doing on the toilet that caused her to drop it?
I don't understand. And I don't know that. And I'm very, very leery about using the phone when I'm in the bathroom anyway. I don't know about y'all, but that makes me distinctly uncomfortable. So it's a thing that I choose not to do. I mean, here's the only times I will do that. There are only two times that I will use the phone when I'm engaged in that private activity. One is if I'm already on a call, and have you ever done this? Have you ever been on the phone, and you're on your cell phone, and you're talking to, and see, this is a thing that people didn't have to deal with in the past. Do you remember, like, you would watch those movies in the 70s or the early 80s, and they would signify that a guy was really wealthy, and the way that he was really wealthy, you could tell, is he had a toilet phone. You would go, and he would be sitting in the bathroom, and he would have a phone next to the, and it was always white. It was always, like, just like a white princess phone in the stall next to the toilet, and that's how they indicated that the guy was wealthy, just like they used to have, like, I was watching this Woody Allen film the other day, and they were indicating his wealth by the fact that he had one of those car phones, and it was like the big ass, like Uniden phones with the cord, like going into the glove box, and that's how you could tell he was a wealthy man. But this is a thing that happens now in the age of cell phones, where I will be on the phone, and then you realize that you are, you must use the restroom, you have to use the facilities to relieve yourself, and so you will walk into the bathroom, and you're doing your very best to never, ever, ever. Like, you want to get into the bathroom, complete the mission, wash up, get out of the bathroom without the person on the other end of the phone ever realizing that you are using the bathroom during the call. And I don't know if that's a skill that only I work on, but Sarah is nodding her head indicating that she's done that as well. See, that's the thing.
You cover up the speaker, right, and try not to say anything?
And you start talking really, really loud.
Totally.
Yes.
So, yeah, let's... So
you're all flushed till it's called done.
Totally, yeah, exactly. Or when you flush...
You do the flush and run.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Slam down the handle, bam, bolt for the door. I've totally done that. So, yeah.
What is that? Garbage truck outside.
Why don't we go out and get some pasta tonight? And also, let's get a croissant. And, you know, and meanwhile, yeah. And then you hit the handle and you run for the door. I've done that. Or if sometimes you're already in the bathroom and then the phone rings and it's a phone call you have to take. And then you become hyper-conscious of that weird boomy echo that's around you when you're in the bathroom. So,
in any event.
Well, the point is, so on Friday we had this guy, Ryan, call up. And he was calling about something else. That's the retarded thing. He wasn't even calling about the toilet. He was calling about something. He was calling about some other subject. And he was in the bathroom, and I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm trying to get my girlfriend's cell phone out of the toilet because it's fallen in there and it's wedged inside the toilet bowl. And over the next about 2 hours... We kept checking in with him, and at one point he was standing on top of the toilet, ramming the plumber's snake, and I could hear bits of the porcelain, like, breaking off as he was ramming, just completely, irrevocably damaging a toilet that doesn't belong to him, by the way, because it is his landlord's. And Tim Riley, even now, is giving me the long, stern landlord nod.
Let's not forget that he already damaged the toilet with the Sword of Destiny.
So that's right, exactly. His first method, this guy Ryan, and we'll talk to him later on today, his first technique for getting the cell phone out of the toilet was to put, and I kid you not, a samurai sword down the toilet. Samurai swords don't bend that way, for one thing. Second of all, when did it just become a thing that all men were issued at age 18 in this country? It's like when you turn 18, you fill out your selective service card, you get your driver's license, you can donate plasma, you can vote, and here's a sword. And all guys, they just have it sitting around the house.
I have two.
I say, it's just one of those things now that everybody has. When I was a kid, it was all about nunchucks. Now it's all about swords. So by the end of Friday's show, he had unbolted the toilet, he had taken the toilet off the floor, had turned it sideways, couldn't get the snake to go through, didn't have an auger, but was still convinced that the cell phone that his girlfriend dropped is in the toilet, wedged down in there somewhere. And the girlfriend figured this out by the process of elimination. As he described it, she had the phone when she went into the bathroom. When she left the bathroom, the phone was gone. And it's nowhere else, so it has to be in the toilet. I myself am skeptical about this. But I was talking to Susan Reynolds, who is the CBS Radio Portland marketing guru this morning. And she said, because I offered to replace the guy's toilet if it was under $45, something like that. And Susan said...
Oh, it's gone down. You said under 75 last week.
No, it was... Yeah, but then we found one for 44.
Yeah, there are plenty
of cheap phones
you can get.
Let's be pretty clear about this. I agreed to the
I'm
one.
I'm sure
was...
the landlord's going to be pleased that a used toilet has been installed in the premises.
Tim Riley who said that. By the way, I am not advocate. I did not tell him to unbolt the toilet.
Does that include a new seat?
I don't. Doesn't the seat come with the toilet?
No, a seat is separate from a toilet.
Well, what the hell is that about? Why would they give you a toilet and not sell you the seat? Tim?
Makes sense to me.
Spoken like a property owner. All right.
I have, you know, I had to pay for a brand new seat. I didn't even know what was happening until I got the bill.
Fine. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Why does it... I've never had to buy a new toilet. Why does a toilet not come with a seat? That's like selling you a car and not giving you a steering wheel.
That is true. Take it up with the plumbing manufacturers.
The great thing about your tone of voice is just that you have no... It makes complete and total... You're absolutely fine with that arrangement.
Yes.
I have no problem with it at all. So we ended Friday with me agreeing to buy him a new toilet if it was $44 or under. He was going to bring it down, but the condition was that we got to smash it and get the phone out, and then we get to keep the phone. Because that's what everybody wants around the studio, is a phone that's been lurking inside some pee-stained toilet.
Who gets the toilet pieces at the end? Will they be donated to charity?
We're going to give them to the children at Dornbecker.
Oh,
they
like that.
You're terrible.
No,
you're terrible.
Children
what
love...
What are you going to do? Are you going to make them, like...
Children love razor-sharp pieces of
toys
porcelain.
Toys out of porcelain?
Yes. We're going to make dolls out of them.
Maybe they can carve out the cancer.
Oh, that's...
Oh.
All right. No. That's Aaron Duran who said that, by the way. The Rick Emerson Show does not advocate this type of humor. In any event, so we're going to... anyway, so that we're going to find out what lurks inside the toilet of listener Ryan today. Peter Carlin is going to join us at 1:30 today. We're going to talk a little bit about the show Heroes. And I'm going to come... We're going to talk about it in a little bit. I mean, we're going to talk about other stuff as well. But that's going to be one of the things we talk about. And my perspective is a little different in that I have never seen that show. I'm going to get his take on it before I decide to start investing my time into it. Let's see what else we have. Lisa Goddard will be joining us from The Hill. We're going to talk about Donald Rumsfeld's final day. And let's see, there was some other crap happening today that I didn't... Oh, and we have a final bit of business about our good friend Mark Foley, who brought us so much joy in the year 2006. God bless him. I'm going to miss that guy. You know, and here's the thing. I'm making this prediction right now, and I will repeat this later on to Lisa Goddard. I am making this prediction that Mark Foley is going to be one of those guys who just goes entirely the opposite way and just embraces his gaydom. And you are going to see that guy shaven-chested, greased up, and, like, gyrating on top of a float within the next 3 or 4 years. There's going to be some sort of a... It's going to be like a Halloween parade or something, and he's going to be just on top of a pink float doing the twist while topless. I think he's going to go he's going to go completely the other way. He's just going to grab it and run with it, because his days of being a conservative are over, so you might as well just jump right to the other side there. So we got Lisa Goddard. Ed McCarthy's going to talk about the fact that Prince... Am I the only one who's a little confused by the fact that Janet Jackson's nipple got everybody else into trouble, and they want to have sex-free content so they have Prince, who's going to be gyrating like a little oversexed dwarf and thrusting his pelvis at the camera, apparently, at the Super Bowl show. So we have that.
He's not thought of as being a human being.
What? He's just sort of a...
Okay.
He's just sort of an elf.
He's like an ass-bearing elf.
Yes. I was just going to say he's... I was trying to come up with a name for what Legolas is. They're not just elves. Aren't they some special kind of elf? Legolas and the Lord of the Rings guys?
Keebler elf.
My geek humor, my geek knowledge failed me there. That would have been a lot funnier if I could have referred...
He's a rockin' night elf.
If I could... Thank you. There you go.
You're welcome.
He's a member of the Horde.
No, they're not Horde members.
Okay. There you go. Sarah, are we starting the new push-up thing this week? The new push-up? Okay, so
we can definitely do that.
So what is the new system for my push-ups as of now?
Are you looking at me?
Yes.
Okay. I guess we're going to put all the other ones aside, and then you're going to tease things today and what they all add up until the end of the week or something.
So I think the thing is, as of today, is that now the new system is that I have to get all of these things done by the end of the week, and by the end of the week, I must burn off any push-ups, and Friday afternoon, those not gotten to. So I can no longer, they're like vacation days, I can no longer carry push-ups over from one week to another. I must do push-ups at the end of each week. That's the thing. All right. Excellent. All right, sir, and
but
we will...
You should have to clear out the tally before the end of the year, because I feel like we're getting hosed on this push-up thing.
Yeah, I know. I suspect that that's coming. So, right as we do the end of December weigh-in, I think it's probably going to happen. All right. Excellent, my friend. All right, and we will check in with Mailman Chris at the end of the program to see where we are.
Meet you, shall.
All right, thank you, sir. There you go. There's Aaron. All right, we're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. I saw your MySpace picture, by the way.
Yeah.
So it was you and how many people dressed as Santa Claus?
At one point, there were 480 people.
I thought it was like 20.
No.
Really?
It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
What is it called?
It's called SantaCon.
And that's where you dress up like Santa and then you just you drink?
It's... Well, there are a bunch of rules to it. Like, you're not some, like, jerk about it. You dress as Santa Claus to kind of spread holiday cheer. Yes, there is some drinking involved.
Yes.
But it's basically to cause... you cause chaos all around town. So we met at the fountain downtown.
That's what the rules are for.
It was fun. People are always happy to see Santa Claus.
Of course they are.
And so there's, like, you know, 400 people, like, going through Saturday Market. Then we went to a bar. Try and get, like, 400 people, you know, drinks at one time.
Now, where did
awful.
You get the Santa Claus outfit from?
I bought it at Walgreens.
Really? For how much?
$9.99.
Really?
Yep.
That is amazing. Wow. That's less than I would have expected.
Yeah, it was enormous and really hot. But it was the most fun I've ever had. We got to ride on boats, all dressed as Santa Clauses. I got to walk through the World Trade Center. And by the time I was down on the ground, after we had all been walking through, you know, all the...
Right.
Tubes and whatnot, there was still a row of Santas walking. It was more people than I could have ever imagined.
Was this downtown? Well,
mm-hmm.
It must have been at the World Trade Center, because I don't know where I was, because I didn't see any, and I was downtown on Saturday. So
yeah, we were everywhere. We were down at Saturday Market, then went down by the waterfront, like old Entercom.
Right.
McCormick and Schmick took boats down to the Burnside Skate Park, walked all around there.
Excellent. Portland rules.
It was, yeah, it's the coolest thing ever. And if you look at Fugitives and Refugees, the cover of Chuck Palahniuk's book, there are pictures of SantaCon on the front of it. I didn't even realize it.
Very cool. And if you go to your MySpace page, there's a picture of you. Who is the other person? It's not Nate.
No, it's my friend Kyle.
All right, so you and Kyle. Oh, by the way, well, we'll talk about Kyle here in a second. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
UN Secretary General Kofi Annan calls the U.S. as he leaves office. Lily White, New Hampshire residents flock to see Barack Obama, even though his middle name is Hussein. Nicole Richie is busted for DUI this morning after driving the wrong way on the freeway to Burbank.
Fantastic.
A mother complains, a talking doll called my daughter a slut.
Excellent. God bless us, everyone. The Rick Emerson Show really is for the children. What was the observation I was going to make about blah, 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 Santa? Oh, Kyle, here's the thing about Screech. So I'm watching the Dustin Diamond adult video last night, Screeched, complete with scratch and sniff sticker. And it really is just, first of all, I'm not a big enough Saved by the Bell fan to really know this, but I believe the opening credits of said adult DVD are meant to mimic the opening credits of Saved by the Bell, which is a little disturbing. And it starts off, it is like all of the celebrity porn films, in that it's just completely uninteresting, because it's 55 minutes long, and most of it is just like a lot of inane blather. And then the opening 12 minutes is just Dustin Diamond sitting in a bathtub. It's that thing we saw online, the shot of him sitting in a bathtub, the ring. And have you noticed that an ugly person can take things that are normally very beautiful, by which I'm not referring to the actual sex act, but I'm referring to just... There is this opening shot of him, and he's in a candle, and it's a bubble bath. And it's a bubble bath ringed with candles, right? Now, not how I sit around the house most of the time, but whatever. A bubble bath ringed with candles. Fine, we can all agree that's an aesthetically pleasing image. But then you put Dustin Diamond in the hot tub, and suddenly it just becomes the most vile... It's sort of like having a cigarette butt ground into your favorite food. Suddenly that's all you can taste, and there's nothing redeeming about it whatsoever. So... And these two girls are clearly, this is my observation. When I say clearly, this is my observation as a journalist and pundit. I am simply saying it is my estimation. Here is a newsman on this, a news and radio program operating in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. That these two girls look like hookers. I mean, it's clearly not a lot of like, because I have, and we'll play for you later, his taped introduction and outroduction of this. And it's just, I have to say this about the Dustin Diamond. It is just the saddest thing I've ever seen. You just watch, and you just want to shake your head, and, like, you just want to give him $10 and just tell him to go away. I mean, it's all very... It's all very unpleasant. You watch it, and you're just an overwhelming sense of shame and sadness for him that his life has come to this. And it's just... And then it's disturbing as well. So,
ew, is there a lot of... Because what I was looking at on the back, it looked like there was a lot of girl-on-girls. Is there a lot of Dustin on girls?
What do you mean?
No, I mean... Is he involved in a lot of it, or is he just, like, filming two random girls?
No, he is... there is a lot of, how do I put this? Yes. Yes, Screech is, he is knowing some of the girls in a biblical sense. And it's that hideous thing...
Can you see through the Mr. Bubble?
Yes. And it's that they're doing that hideous thing that is all the rage in porn now, where it's a first-person perspective. So it's like Dustin Diamond holding the little video camera and then looking around as whatever behavior is engaged in. And then, yes, the girls also know one another in a biblical sense. But it's so repellent. It's, you watch it and you just, it's an overwhelming, it's like you're just being covered, like you can feel yourself being covered with grit and dirt and crap and microbes as you're watching. It's like the germs are actually coming off the screen and coating your skin.
Yeah.
It is so... I actually had, because there was the two of them. There was that, and there was the other one that they gave us. And
you're the China one, right?
Yes.
He goes to China.
One night in China. which I actually had to watch that one just to take the foul stench of Dustin Diamond off my head, and that didn't really work either. In any event, it's already 11:30, so we have no time. Because I still got to talk about, some other stuff, and then we got this, and then Guns N' Roses is tonight.
Yeah.
Which I didn't even know about. I mean, I guess I knew, like someone had told me, or I told you
Thursday.
And then you, I think you told me again Friday, and I forgot again Friday, because I just don't care. I just don't care. I couldn't care less. In no way could I be less interested about the Guns N' Roses show tonight, and yet I am inexplicably going. Not so inexplicably, but I got invited to go. And so now that I feel like I have to go out of this sense of obligation. And it's
you should
thing.
Go.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go.
Okay.
But we'll talk about it. We don't have time. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We're seeing a radio correspondent, Lisa Goddard, to whom I will have no discussions about the Dustin Diamond sex video. I'll go anyway. The Rick Emerson Show continues after this. Radio program. Thank you for coming along. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time once again. Will you please welcome to the Rick Emerson Radio program from the Hill. Fashionably attired with a head full of whimsical musings, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Hello!
Like butterflies, they come from my hand.
is this the part where I lift the steaming cauldron of whatever and then I walk across the rice paper and then I am a kung fu master?
Yes. Hey, you know what? I'm taking kung fu lessons.
Are you really?
I really am. I'm taking Wing Chun kung fu.
Let me just note first and foremost that that's fantastic and that your stock with our listeners, especially our male listeners, has just gone up exponentially.
Hey! But
let me then follow that up by asking why.
A friend of ours is a kung fu master.
And when you say a friend of ours, you mean a mafioso.
That's exactly what I mean. A friend of mine. Yeah, and he, Mark, is a kung fu master, and he's been trying to get the boyfriend and I to take lessons for a while, and since... You know, I've lived in downtown D.C. Right now I live just outside of D.C., but I'm going to move back in the next year. And so my boyfriend is concerned because of crime. He wants me to be able to protect myself. I just want to be a kung fu master.
Lisa, he's your fiancé.
I know. I'm still not there yet on the fiancé bit. And I'll work on it.
What?
Yeah, so fiancé, so
what?
Yeah, but that's why. I want to be a kung fu master.
That's awesome.
This is already just the best and weirdest phone call we've ever had. and by the way, I am going to have Scotty. Scotty, please not to be excerpting that phrase, I want to be a kung fu master, out. I can, we'll drop that in. That'll be sort of your equivalent to Ed McCarthy's laugh. There you go. Thank you.
Oh, is that Ed? That's great.
That is Ed McCarthy because he has the best laugh on earth. It's so there you go. All right.
A great laugh. See, mine's nothing. Mine just pales. Mine's anemic.
How long does it take to become a kung fu master?
I think many, many, many years.
Or is that one of those, the pupil becomes the teacher, you know?
No, I don't know.
There is no spoon kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's probably a lot longer than the two-month time frame that will hold me. Actually, though, you know, when I start something like this, I usually do stick with it, but we'll see. Nancy Pelosi could be a great impediment to my kung fu lessons.
Well, I was going to say, but this, you know, the next time you get one of those Congress people that gives you a bunch of crap about asking follow-up questions, though, I mean, you let them know you got 15 ways to snap their neck like a dry twig.
That's right.
Not that we would ever advocate that kind of behavior.
No.
Let me ask you this. Did you guys see this thing? And this is, I'm reading this. This is now from The Observer. Which is a British paper. This thing about how Britain is no longer using the phrase war on terror.
I did see that. They say coming from the Foreign Office there in Great Britain. Isn't that amazing?
It doesn't really say what they're going to replace it with, but I'm assuming they're just going to say the hostilities in Iraq or whatever. So is that a thing just for the press, or is that the government itself that's no longer going to be using the phrase war on terror?
It's the government itself that they're saying that. Well, especially the agencies that deal with anything internationally, and it is a strong woman. I know you are doing a great job in chronicling the changes in terminology over the last week, and there have been a few, and this is a really significant one. I think Great Britain backing off of war on terror is certainly as far as, I think they're not using it at all, but I think because it has been so intertwined with Iraq, and inappropriately according to some people in Great Britain, they're just backing off it entirely.
And is this just, I mean, is this really like the biggest indication yet that Britain really mentally at least just has one foot out the door on this whole thing? It's like when you stop saying your girlfriend and you start saying, well, she's this girl I spent time with, or, you know, whatever. You start downgrading the technology or the terminology, rather, just trying to, you know, as preparing for your eventual exit.
You know, I think that certainly the population of Great Britain has never been fully on board the invasion in Iraq. But I think, yeah, now with the government pulling back from a very important, from the phrase, actually, the phrase that paid, the phrase that started the whole thing. Yeah, I think that's right. I think you could look at this as one foot out the door. But I do think that because of the way things are in Iraq, they don't have a lot of options. It's going to be very hard for them to pull all their troops out with things the way they are right now.
And then speaking of one final observation about the terminology, because you're right, this is a thing that fascinates me, is just the etymology of these phrases I mean, the Bush administration, whatever one thinks about them, really in terms of media manipulation, and I don't even mean that as a negative so much, just it, really the way that they do use terminology and the way that they frame. The Republicans are just masters at framing the debate, framing the argument, setting the ground rules, setting the terms, and establishing
talking points like them. Yeah.
Exactly. The context in which we are discussing these things, and there's no clearer example of it than this thing that the Bush administration does, and I believe they are the first people I've ever seen do it. I don't remember Bill Clinton or the Reagan or anybody doing this, where they, whenever President Bush is speaking somewhere, he's in front of this banner, and the banner behind him will just be littered with whatever that day's catchphrase is. It'll be printed over and over again as a backdrop behind him.
Yeah, Bush started that when he was running in 2000 for the Republican nomination. And that's when that whole compassionate conservative thing, remember they were behind McCain, and then they started doing those big banners everywhere. After the South Carolina race. You know, you may have callers saying otherwise, but I'm like you. That's when I remember that starting with Bush. And in fact, I think it's sort of, maybe it's reached its peak. Sometimes you don't see it. You saw it all the time. There wasn't a news conference without it for years and years. And now every now and then you just see the flags.
And so now the new phrase, as we talked about on Friday, is this the way forward
yes.
business. And in Sunday's New York Times, Frank Rich had this editorial where, I mean, and the poll quote from it that everybody is using is where he says, we're not winning. We have, in fact, lost. But he also notices here that this phrase, the way forward, was actually created by a public relations. It was the same public relations firm that Walmart uses, incidentally.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they are the ones who have been retained by the administration to come up with a phrase to define whatever it is we're going to do in Iraq now. And apparently, the way forward is the phrase. And this CNN prep sheet here says, and this is, I'm reading directly from the CNN prep sheet, it says, George Bush starts with a meeting at the State Department, followed by an Oval Office session. It's all leading up to a new strategy for the war to be unveiled before Christmas. And that sounds a lot like when Richard Nixon used to refer to having a secret plan to end the Vietnam War that, like, he kept sealed in an envelope in his pants.
Oh, he never said secret plan. Right. But it definitely, the implication was there. Right.
So when they say that they have a new strategy for the Iraq War to be unveiled before Christmas, I mean, are they just lying and making... Is the new strategy just going to be the same thing they've been doing but with a new coat of paint, or...
That is my question as well. You know, if they're going to come out with a new strategy in 2 weeks, really less, because they've got to, first of all, come up with a strategy, then spend several days discussing how they're going to talk about it, like, you figuring out their words, their phrases. To do that, and you figure the president is spending today, tomorrow, Wednesday, meeting with people, the State Department, Pentagon, Iraqi leaders over fiber lines, and the vice president of Iraq is going to be at the White House. You know, you do wonder how rigorously different can it be if they haven't decided it quite yet, but yet it will be a formal policy within 2 weeks. You know, obviously they have a lot of plans to choose from. They have, the Pentagon has been working on this for months. They have a lot of ideas already right on the drawing board down to the last detail. But even so, I'm like you. We've heard for the last year, again and again, oh, the president has a major speech tonight on Iraq. The president has a major speech tonight. And those speeches, by and large, have not contained very, very much in the way of change. Now, of course, Donald Rumsfeld is gone, so that's one huge change, which indicates that this time maybe it'll be different. But I'm like you. I'm watching to see if it's a coat of paint or not.
And that leads to two other small questions, one of which is, first of all, I guess I misunderstood when Donald Rumsfeld was sort of, when he was asked to spend more time with his family. Now, he's just sort of, what is he, just been kind of hanging around, stealing office supplies and talking to people at the water cooler? I mean,
Well, he stopped off in Iraq. He was in Iraq this weekend saying goodbye to the troops. You know, he still is in charge of the Pentagon. Robert Gates has not been sworn in. He's not to be sworn in until the 18th, which leads to even more questions about this new Iraq policy. Tony Snow, the White House press secretary, of course, was just asked in the last hour, is Robert Gates going to be a part of deciding this new strategy? And Tony Snow said, well, that's a good question. So it just adds to the things. But I think Don Rumsfeld is the man in charge until Robert Gates is sworn in.
It really just is like some Keystone Cops in hell. I mean, it really is. And so, and my final question here is, yeah, because I don't really know a lot about how the government works when it comes to certain things. And so my question is, this obviously isn't, we're not at war in the sense of a formal declaration. You know, the troops are really there serving at the behest of the president and the Defense Department and so forth. And so my question is, when the incoming Congress sort of is there and they take control and they take the reins, if they just decide one more, if the new Congress just decides that they've just had it up to here and they're sick of this tomfoolery and it's time to pull the ripcord, what could they do to just sort of bring the curtain down on this whole thing, if anything, and what would be the mechanism by which they do it?
Well, the authority for the troops being in Iraq is generally seen as coming under what was called a resolution of force that came after September 11th. And there's a lot of debate over whether that does in fact cover Iraq. And then, of course, there was the outward vote on the Senate and House floors as well. And some people say that that needs to be renewed soon. And also the UN mandate, that's a whole separate issue, is also coming up for renewal. But as far as what power the Congress really has, it's really the power of the purse, and that they have the budget authority to fund this war or not. The truth is, though, Democrats are giving all indications that they're not willing to use that power to change Iraq policy, I think because they know that that's politically very dangerous for them as they're starting off, and that they want to at least give the president a chance to change policy on his own. And I'm not sure that they want to be in charge of the war either. I think they want things to change, but I don't think that the Democrats necessarily have a very firm idea of precisely what steps need to be taken.
Well, I will grant you that. Democrats aren't real big on, they're not real big on actual cogent thought.
I think they are getting a little better, this crew. We'll see. We will see what happens in January. I've seen more specifics from them than I expected, which isn't saying a lot. But when it comes to Iraq, it really is such a minefield that I think they are staying away from really what is their main source of power, and that's the budget.
More importantly, does your kung fu training involve you breaking heavy or unwieldy objects of any kind?
Not yet, but I think perhaps at some point, it does involve a very large dummy that's the equivalent of one of those large boxing bags,
right?
But with very thick poles coming out of it.
Fantastic. Well, you have to get us like an action shot at some point of you kind of giving the power strike, like right to the solar plexus area.
All right, I'll work on it.
Fantastic. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, don't screw with her.
Right.
Right there on the Hill, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Thank you, sister.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, on the Hill. Her knowledge is lethal, and so are her hands. Hi, Sarah. What's
that's
up with you?
Nothing. I saw your eyes light up the second she kept saying boyfriend. You and I both noticed that.
I wasn't that. Okay, now, I was not the first one to make that observation. I have had several listeners who have noted that even though she is engaged, which is purportedly the happiest time of a woman's life, it's the question she's waiting her whole life to be asked, that somehow she just keeps falling into saying boyfriend. And then when you, by the way, I also would like to note that I'm not the one who brought it up to her. When she said boyfriend twice in rapid succession, I just sort of looked at Sarah and I just sort of arched my eyebrows as if to say, yes, Rick Emerson notices that. And then you are the way, and I don't know whether she heard us or whether we made a noise or something, but you then addressed that with her and her response was, yeah, I'm just not quite there yet. You all can draw your own conclusions.
I think they're very happy and in love.
I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying I'm not going to weigh in. It would be inappropriate of me at this juncture to weigh in, and I don't wish to be inappropriate. Rick, about the Guns N' Roses concert, this email says, FYI, I was working for the union at the Rose Garden yesterday. They received, I should give a little backstory here. So Chris Sneathan, who writes for the good folks at OregonLive.com, so he apparently has got the hookup at the Rose Garden, and it's, I don't know if they're decent seats or not. I think they are. I think they're good seats. He's got, like, the parking pass and the, you know, whatever. Which sounds like... And the parking pass, which I guess came with the tickets. And he's been kind of nagging me about it for weeks. I'm not trying to bust on him. I mean, I am grateful that he thought of me. Because, you know, if you saw Bigger Than Jesus, you know, I got a whole thing about Axl Rose and blah, blah, blah. But he knows what a big Axl Rose fan I am. And so he's been kind of after me. He's like, come on, you got to go see it. You know, you don't want to miss this. But I've just been so torn about it. Because the last time I saw... See, you are not old enough yet. You are not old enough to have this experience. Someday... Mm-hmm. Remember when we had that Charlotte's Web thing the other day where we were looking at that New York Times ad for the upcoming Charlotte's Web movie, which is going to be all CGI, and it has, like, Whoopi Goldberg or whoever in it, and you were just like, oh, they're raping my childhood! And see, being 26 now... The childhood raping is just over the horizon.
So it'll be like for example, they try to reunite New Kids on the Block, but they'll replace, like, two of the members with random
people.
Totally,
but no, it'll be like a guy from Color Me Bad. Like, it'll be, like, you'll go to see, quote, New Kids on the Block, and it'll be, like, who are the loser members? It'll be Danny Wood. Is that his name?
Danny Wood,
It'll be Danny Wood.
Joe McIntyre.
Joey Mac. Yeah, Joe McIntyre.
He's the only one that stopped the reunion in the first place, little bastard.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's him.
Did they try to reunite?
Mm-hmm.
It's too soon.
VH1 had a huge special on it where they tried to get together, and he was an ass.
For Bands Reunited.
Yeah, he was so rude to them.
Like the guy, like Nuno Bettencourt from Extreme.
He's doing so well. I mean, where is that guy even gone? What is he doing?
Danny Wood, and he's the ugly one, too.
No, well, Danny Wood...
He's an ugly
man.
No,
I'm talking about Joey McIntyre.
Oh, Joey McIntyre. Boy, he still looks like he's about 9 years old.
Yeah. He looks like a deformed child. Like he looks like himself as a child, but older and, like, disproportionate.
He looks like one of those kids that's got the big watery head. You know it's true. He looks like his whole body is retaining fluid. Hello, I'm Joey McIntyre. anywho. No, Danny Wood, man. Boy, he's an ugly bastard. That was a simpler time. That guy would never make it. They must have picked. That's like when you pick a puppy or a kitten out of the litter and you think it's going to be great, and then it grows up to be stumpy and falls over a lot. And that's, you know, and you're like, oh, I didn't know. It looked all great when it was suckling in the box. It looked normal, and then you find out later it's got, like, a third eye and it walks into everything. That's what Danny Wood from New Kids on the Block is like. And yes,
I think he's a realtor now.
I am talking about New Kids on the Block, and you guys can you can all eat it if you don't like it. I am old enough. I had to play their music, and I am old enough that as a DJ, mm-hmm. I had to play New Kids on the Block songs. So we've done a lot of talk about New Kids on the Block. It's too soon for those guys to reunite. They got to give it, like, another 5 years, probably.
But they're so old already. I mean, they're not going to be able to do it in 5 years.
Who would that ever stop, though? I mean...
I was in fifth grade when I was a huge fan of theirs. So that was, like, what, 15 years ago?
They're already so old. They're only, like, 30. They're only my age.
I mean, that's not...
But it was a different time, because they were a dancing, singing, you know, pop group.
Yeah.
And if they're going to give a full performance, they're not going to be doing that
well,
when
you
they're 40.
You know what? New Edition pulled it off, though. New Edition reunited last year, I think. And those guys are even older than the New Kids on the Block were, because New Kids on the Block were modeled on New Edition. Same guy, Maurice Starr, was the guy who created them. That Danny Wood, though, let's just go back to what an ugly-looking bastard he is.
You need to stop picking on Danny Wood.
Danny Wood doesn't give a... He didn't give a crap what I think about him. He's independently wealthy.
I saw a picture of him.
Let's hope. Let's hope he saves some money.
He didn't. But he's in real estate now, and when I was watching the biography on him, he had braces. It was like, could it get any worse?
You know who's another marble mouth bastard is, what's his name? Not Jordan Knight. Jonathan Knight? Who's the guy that dated Tiffany?
Jonathan.
He's just a big googly-eyed twit. I mean, look at that guy. And he is like 50, and he's still got that thing where he talks like this. You know, so tell me about Tiffany. Well, we were both too young, and I just don't think we were mature enough to have... And anyway, so no, those guys have it. And as you will learn, as Gene Simmons has taught us, Sarah, you are never too old to go out and bilk your fans for one more dollar. You are never too old to strip mine the nostalgia of your audience. You are never...
Like if they reissue the T-shirts that we had from, like, fifth grade.
And they're going to look all, like, gnarled up and distressed, like they're going to be 80. I was at Hot Topic the other day, and I'm unashamed to say that, so everybody out there can just pound it if you have some problem with me being at Hot Topic. And I was there in Provo, or in Salt Lake City, or wherever the hell I was. It was Provo. And, I mean, in Provo... Really, just as retarded a place as Hot Topic kind of is sometimes, because it is such pre-manufactured rebellion. In a place like Provo, Utah, you really understand the appeal of that, because and I am as cynical as anybody, and I understand how Hot Topic is just like the most mass-marketed, non-threatening, just non-organic crap that they sell there. But after being in Provo for a couple days, you walk into a Hot Topic, and it really is just like you've walked into the... It's like you've just walked into the Whiskey A Go-Go. It is just the most refreshing place. But I was at Hot Topic, and so I'm, like, you know, looking around at the crap, and I'm, you know, whatever. And I realized I had this shocking revelation. Now, it is impossible now to buy a T-shirt that looks new. They no longer sell rock shirts that look like they're new. I'm not complaining about it. It's just an observation I make. Every single T-shirt you buy now, they all have... We have entered this time period where it's impossible to tell the difference between a shirt that you bought today and a shirt that you bought in 1972. Because they all look exactly the same. And so that is going to be the next step, is they're going to reissue some New Kids on the Block shirt, and it's going to be like those shirts. And it was always the fat chicks, and they would wear those shirts down to their knees, and like with the big ass button. It's like a button the size of a plate, and it just said like, Donnie!
Oh yeah, we've talked about this. I still have those buttons.
Oh yeah, save that stuff.
I will. But I still have all my gem dolls. I have everything. My parents have let us keep everything.
But just over the horizon, that gleaming light that you see just cresting the edge of the world, that is the raping and pillaging of your childhood, which is drawing near. Because my childhood has been, they've gotten everything they can out of me. I can't think of, I mean, they got the Transformers movie coming out, and then the word is that they're going to make Steven Spielberg's going to make the G.I. Joe movie. But after that, I'm done. They've squeezed every dollar they can out of the once moist and damp sponge that is my adolescence and childhood. You, though, Sarah, the raping has just begun. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Maybe you should read it. Don't play it.
Anyway, so no, New Kids on the Block, that reunion will be coming. And again, it'll be Danny Wood and Jonathan Knight and like a guy from Color Me Bad. And then, like, the cousin of one of the other guys. And then they'll tour forever, and you'll go see them. You will claim that you're not gonna. You'll deny it. You'll dig in your heels. You'll pitch a fit about it. George Lucas raped my childhood style. And then you will go see it regardless. And so here I am going to see goddamn so-called Guns N' Roses tonight, which I don't want to see. Because the last time I saw Guns N' Roses, the only time I saw Guns N' Roses, it was a fantastic show. It was in the Kingdome, and it was Guns N' Roses and Metallica and Motorhead. And it was really the very peak, the very pinnacle of the careers for all of those guys. I mean, it was never the same. It really was the last bright, shining moment for all of those bands. I mean, maybe not Motorhead, but for Guns N' Roses, Metallica, certainly. And in the Kingdome, man, 80,000 people. Dennis was there, too. I run into a staggering number of people I know who are also at that show. Scott Daly was there.
The people my age, girls my age, I run into a lot of people who are at the same New Kids on the Block concert as me at the Kingdome.
You kind of bond over it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird, isn't it? Isn't
yeah.
That kind of, like when I talked to Dennis, it's weird to think... Maybe it's only weird to me. Maybe this is what, like, how your dreams are only interesting to you and your stupid kids' goddamn finger paintings are only interesting to you. So maybe this is only interesting to me, but, you know, my show, so I'm talking about it. It is strange to think, though, that in 1992,
15 years ago almost, that I'm there in the kingdom, and somewhere in the kingdom is a young, squeaky-voiced, drunk, stoned out of his mind Dennis Pitzenbarger. And also Scott Daly, pre-Duran Duran tattoo. You know, they're all kind of lurking there somewhere. Anyway, so this guy says, I was working for the union at the Rose Garden yesterday. They received advisements from the tour company to the stagehands, roadies, and individuals that Axel... Oh, God.
What?
That Axel... No, it's the same old crap that Axel doesn't come on till 11 p.m. and might come on at midnight or later.
What?
Well, you don't know.
Don't go with that crap.
You see...
He should be happy that people are still paying for his, like, extended hair ass.
It's also listed on the Ticketmaster website. Quote, due to recent Guns N' Roses shows ending times, Global Spectrum, operators of the Rose Quarter, recommends that concert patrons coming to the Monday, December 11th Guns N' Roses concert, please plan accordingly. Then they list when the TriMet shuts down. Nice.
Yeah, great.
See, so that's what I've got. And the only thing that bugs me about that is, I mean... The problem with the Axl Rose coming on at 1 in the morning or whatever and playing until... Sneeden told me. He said that he anticipates not even getting out of there until like 2:30 a.m. And that sort of became, you know, the Guns N' Roses trademark during the late 80s and early 90s. It was their trademark that Axl Rose was just such a violent, unstable, unpredictable, mercurial individual that sometimes he just wouldn't even show up till 12:30 and the band would go on at 1 a.m. and they'd play till 4 a.m. and then everybody would riot and they'd set fire to something and everybody goes home happy. But, I mean, that's just sort of, at the risk of sounding like a rock snob purist, I mean, that was sort of, relatively speaking, okay at the time because clearly they were just this unstable band that was battling all number of chemical demons and otherwise and they were just always on the verge of implosion. And it did feel like legitimate rock and roll unpredictability. It did feel like a thing that was legitimately sort of wild and uncontrolled and they would not go on till 1 a.m. but they would play until 3:30 in the morning because they were just completely out of control. Now it's just sort of this thing he does because it's what he does. Axl goes on at 1 a.m. because it's just become his shtick. It's like that stupid thing that and I say this as a guy who I'm a huge Guns N' Roses fan. I mean, everybody knows I'm a massive fan of Guns N' Roses. Well, I have been forever. But it's like that thing that James Brown used to do, which he probably still does. If anybody's seen James Brown in the last 10 years, he probably still does this. Where James Brown does this shtick where he is singing and he's like, you know, and then he falls over and hits his knee on the stage. And these guys rush out of the wings, and they lift him up, and he pretends to hobble like he's broken his knee. And they try to escort him off stage. They're like, come on, Godfather of Soul, you got to come off stage. Show Business Dynamite Man, you got to come off stage. And so they'll try to escort him off stage, and then he does this thing. He does this thing where he then pulls away from them and goes back to the microphone and starts singing again. And they, and then they feign horror. James, you're not strong enough. Your knee. And he'll sing, and then he'll do the splits again and hit his knee into the stage again. And then they come over and they grab him and they try. And he does it like four times in a row where he walks off stage and then he comes back for one more encore despite the pain. And it's just his whole shtick. And that's Axl Rose's thing with going on at 1 a.m. And yet saying all of that, here I am tonight going to be there like an idiot. What is that sound? Oh, hello, it's a lightsaber.
Tim brought it in.
Speaking of the raping of my childhood, you know, you can own one of those for just $155, Sarah.
Who's this?
I believe it's John Paul's.
The couple guys are all, they're
this
all nerds.
Is pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, go to Aaron's house, there's like five of those laying around at all
times.
Yeah,
I remember these from his wedding with the lightsaber.
That's what we did the honor guard thing with. All right, we should break here. We'll come back with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. It's 503-733-2970, the AM 970 new... You don't know how to turn it off. The AM 970, and you got a Sith lightsaber, too. You know, when I was at the wedding... Hi there. We're dorks. Back after this is the Rick Emerson Radio Show, the noon news hour just around the corner. You stay right there.